We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft. But Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink. Which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Hello, everybody! Hey now, and welcome to another edition of Courtside with Christy and Gabe right here on the Her Hoop Stats Podcast Network. I am Christy Winter-Scott, joined as always by my guy, Gabe Ibrahim. Gabe, some surprises this week, but some really great games, but some surprises on the WNBA front.
One pretty close to home.
I don't know if surprise is the right word. Well, help me out. Was it a surprise?
So Mike Tebow, if you don't know, I assume you know, considering you're watching this podcast or listening to us on YouTube or Twitter or Apple Podcasts, however you get your podcast, we hope you're hearing it out. But Mike Tebow has stepped down as the head coach of the Washington Mystics. He will now be the team's GM and only the team's GM. Yeah. His son Eric will take over the head coaching spot. LaToya Sanders actually moves up one spot on the bench, and Maria Giovanetta moves up a little bit in the front office doing more basketball stuff in addition to her like millions of roles on the team. And pretty much everyone I mentioned has been with the organization for 10 plus years. And you've been around these people so much. So it was a little bit of a shock.
Okay.
But I don't know. I feel pretty comfortable. I don't know about you.
No, absolutely. And I think when I said surprise, I kind of had to catch myself. I don't know if I used the proper word because Mike Tebow has been grooming Eric Tebow for this moment. Yeah. And he's beyond ready for this next step as the head coach of the Washington Mystics. But I say surprise because it was a Tuesday and it was just like the randomness of the news like popping. And I think the moment was a surprise, but the circumstance was not a surprise, if that makes sense. So obviously, you know, all the emotions for me came streaming through my eyeballs. It doesn't take much for me when I'm truly touched. And honestly, just the reverence of Mike Tebow and what he's been able to do over the course of his long tenured and successful career. Three times he was named WNBA Coach of the Year, the longest winning streak. I don't say streak, but the most wins in WNBA history.
The winningest champ.
Yes. WNBA champion in 2019 with the Mystics and, you know, several runs to the finals with Connecticut and with Washington to the year before. So it was, for me, I mean, that's family to me, you know, and to see that happen. It was touching. I can't say it any other way. And you know, sometimes you're allowed to be sad for the ending of things, but in that same breath and thought, you can also be thrilled for the next chapter for both Eric and Mike Tebow. And, you know, Mike said on the press conference the other day, he said, you know, I received so many texts, it was pretty much overwhelming, but I think people thought that I would be, you know, picking up golf and like not doing anything else. And he's like, no. I'm still general manager. So he has had that role for years with Washington. So that's not an adjustment or something new for him. And he said he had history with player personnel and all of that throughout his career in the CBA, the old CBA and the NBA and all of that. So he said he's always had a really strong interest in what being a GM entails. So that's nothing new for him, but no. For Eric, wow, I'm thrilled for him. And I know you are too, you guys are buds. And it's just an amazing passing of the torch, if you will, in terms of that role. But we've seen in practices, right?
Yeah.
Gabe with the Mystics that, you know, he's totally hands-on. Sometimes he's out there running around too, you know, just demonstrating, you know, switches and how things are going to be handled in the games, defensively, offensively. So he's ready. It's not like a big adjustment for him either.
I mean, I think it will be an adjustment because of what you're saying, like, because we do see him on the court all the time. I asked him about that. He's, you know, he said, like, I'm not going to be able to stop myself from doing that because that's part of the big fun of being a coach, right? So,
right.
But I think it will be an adjustment for him, you know, just in listening to some other coaches who have made that leap, you know, going from assistant coach to head coach.
Oh, yeah.
Mike McDaniel, the new Dolphins coach, I feel like I've talked about him a few times. Like, he talked really eloquently about, like, the differences between an assistant coach and a head coach. I think especially in basketball, you know, when you can have a rapport with the players, it's very different. So it'll be a learning curve. It'll be different. And obviously, Mike Tebow's Mike Tebow. You said it, winningest coach in WNBA history. 16 WNBA playoff appearances, most ever. So the Mystics had – I just wrote this article, Gabe. I believe they had only had one or two playoff series victories.
Before that.
Before he got there, and now they have six playoff series victories, including the WNBA finals. Wow. So, you know, Mike made the program, but Eric was there for all of that. And so I think it is, like you're saying, you know, I think it'll be fine going forward in terms of, you know, the continuity. I don't think it'll be that different.
Right.
But man, it is crazy to think, you know, back on how much Mike Tebow has meant to this franchise and to the sport. I mean,
yes,
43 year coaching career. And you guys can read this article. It's going to come out in Bullets Forever, hopefully today at some point. But you know, he was with the Lakers right when they got Magic Johnson.
Yes. My God.
He was with the Bulls right when they got Michael Jordan.
MJ.
He was with the Connecticut Sun when they got Tina Charles.
Yeah.
And he was with the Washington Mystics when they got Elena Deladon. So it's like where this guy goes, great players tend to follow.
Yeah.
And he, you know, as you mentioned, he was a scout for those LA and Chicago teams and helped build those championship teams. So, you know, him just moving, you know, he has been doing the GM stuff already. So it's just going to be that focus for him. You know, I think it's interesting, but man, you know, Christy, I don't want to venge into, get into potential emotional areas.
No, I'm good.
So, well, I was just thinking, like, you know, he said Mike said in this in the press conference, like, my wife asked me, why are you giving up the job that you like the most? And it's just like, it kind of hit me like, man, like, I think this was honestly somewhat of a pragmatic choice for Mike, the timing of it, just because you looked around the WNBA, there was a lot of head coaching openings. And if Eric was not told that he was going to have this opportunity in the future, he probably would not have been on the staff to take this opportunity now. So I do think some of it was, you know, hey, we got to do this for Eric soon because he's going to get hired somewhere else. If we don't do this now, we're going to lose him and our plan kind of falls apart.
Yeah.
So I just kind of felt like, you know, man, this is great. I'm happy for everyone. But there was like some part of me that was like, man, you know, I wish it wasn't like this. I wish Mike could keep going. But I understand it from the organizational perspective.
Right. And now I know after you've posed the thought and the question, why you thought it would drum up some emotion in me because of the decision I had to make to leave coaching this year. And it's hard, man, because it's, you know, for as much as you say coaching or playing basketball even is not who you are, it's what you do. But man, sometimes it's interwoven, Gabe, and sometimes it is who you are. oh, I'm not going to get all caught up emotionally. Oh, it almost got me.
Well, he does get to be in the building, right?
He so does it's get not to be in the building.
You get to be in the building. It is, I imagine, going to be different for him, but
it's a lot, man. There's an adjustment for everyone. I don't care. Like it is your DNA, right? It's in you to coach. It's in you to motivate and encourage, but also strategize and put your team in the best opportunities, in best situations to win. And that doesn't just mean win games. That means like win the draft, win the roster, right? Put the pieces together properly to build a successful organization. And that's what Mike Tebow has done over the last 10 years. And obviously the 10 years before that, when he was with Connecticut. So, I don't know. It is an adjustment, but sometimes you just have to, you know, if you're reading a book, I mean, you don't stay on the same chapter from the beginning to the end. There's an evolution throughout that book. There are different things that happen, and you just have to kind of roll with the punches and take what that next chapter gives you. And sometimes it is the unknown, like kind of how I feel right now. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it is the unknown, and you're kind of every day making adjustments and feeling your way through it. And it is different, but it doesn't mean it's wrong or bad. It just means that it's different and you just have to figure out how to navigate. So I know Coach Tebow is going to be, I mean, obviously he's going to be in the gym, and he's going to be right there, you know, choosing players and being his general manager self, which he has been masterful at over the last
really has.
10 years, made big choices. And I think you have to respect him for that. And we do want things to stay the same. We really do, like in life, just in general. But sometimes, you know, the greatest accomplishments or the greatest achievements come when you're uncomfortable, you know, when there are changes that have been made. So look at me preaching to myself. But anyway, I can go on and on. But I'm telling myself that. But I'm also saying, you know, for the fans, you know, I know they're thrilled for Mike. I know they're thrilled for Eric. But it's a great opportunity for both of them to stretch and learn and grow in this new chapter with the Mystics. And, you know, I'm here for it.
Yeah, hopefully Mike does get a little golf in, though, because eventually that is the plan, to go and do whatever else with your time. I don't know if you want to golf. It is kind of hard to golf in D.C., to be honest. But shouts to some of our streamers. Did we ever make a name for a courtside team?
No, but you know what? I was in Chicago this week for the Notre Dame Northwestern women's basketball game. My gosh, if you're watching, I can't remember his name because I had an early morning flight. I didn't sleep that night and my body clock is still messed up. But if you're watching, I told you to go ahead and chime in and say something to us. But we had a fan in Chicago. It says, I watch you and Gabe. I should have videoed it and we could have plugged it in.
We could have put it on the show.
Darn it.
Comment mystery person. And hi to Braden, hi to Dano, our favorite folks.
Hey y'all.
Dano was so pumped.
Yeah.
So Dano, I don't know if folks have been paying attention, but Dano and the folks over at Spread the Floor, our betting branch here in Her Hoops, that's have literally been crushing it. Like they would have made you a ton of money if you were subscribed to their products and listening to them. I'm not just saying that because we work here.
Right.
Like, they made a ton of money. But Dano is saying that he had bet on Notre Dame, I believe, and just hearing you call the game made it that much better as his bet started coming through because Notre Dame started to pull away in that game. So he was pumped, and I can't say enough. Go if you like betting, Spread the Floor for women's basketball right now is going to be an amazing product for you.
Oh, there's a comment. Look, Dano said something.
Dano said he saw you saying how much happier he was hearing your voice during the Notre Dame game. So I mean, okay. So let's. Do we have anything else to talk about with the Mystics? Like, I'm trying to think because, really, like we said, like this is not going to be a different philosophy.
No.
They don't have. You know, we're not going to see a big change in the offense. Eric's offensive philosophy comes from Mike, and you know they learned it through that. I don't think there's going to be a big change in personnel. Everyone's around. I don't think there's going to be a big change defensively either. Maybe just a little bit more Latoya Sanders influence. Which, hey, let's keep doing that. That sounds like a great idea.
Yeah, awesome.
And
associate head coach for Latoya.
which is, you know, typically means you're next in line for something. And
hopefully
we get to hold on to her for a few more years.
I know.
But she's going to be controlling defense, but I don't expect much change. You look at the salary cap right now for the Mystics. I mean, Elena Deladon, Natasha Cloud, Mighty Shines Down, Ariel Atkins,
yeah,
and Shakir Austin, all under contract for next year. Now, that seems to be your starting five, right?
Okay, yeah.
The choices come in the bench area and in the draft area. So they have a number four pick and some bench players, and obviously Alicia Clark's on the free agency market, Elizabeth Williams on the free agency market. What would you think like would help as an addition in terms of position? Because it's tough to see where they're going to come from, where it's going to come from, the free agency or the draft. But what would be something that you would want for this team, for Eric, going forward?
Sure thing. That's a great question because, you know, you're looking at what happened with Shakir Austin and in the media day and the training camp last year prior to the WNBA season. It was like, well, you know, she'll spot check some minutes, you know, throughout the season. And then she turned out to be on the all rookie team, was up for rookie of the year. So I think the way Shakir Austin exploded, you know, it makes me rethink what the necessary pieces are moving forward for Washington. And I would say a shooting guard who can be consistent, who can stretch the floor. Cloud's going to find you, honey. She's going to find you. Had a career best 7 assists this past WNBA season, is playing in the AU league right now and is in the front offices with that as well, which I'd love to see all these phenomenal women leading leagues like that. I'm all for that. But I just think Cloud's going to be able to set the table up for a spread offense that Washington loves to run. Yes, they like to find Elena Deladon on that left block and let her wheel and deal in two-man game. But at the same time, I think they need a bona fide score, right?
Yeah.
And is it Kristen Williams who comes back from injury? Is it, you know, is it someone else who they can pick up at the number four spot in the WNBA draft? What is that going to look like? So I think for me, I think it's going to be a perimeter-based decision. And that's just my guess. No insider information, just my personal observation. I think that's what it's going to be. I think, you know, with Shakira Austin doing what she did last year, I think that's going to free up some post-work that Elena Deladon will have to do. I think Deladon can stretch the floor a little bit as well and run some more at the three. Maisha Hines-Allen can stay on the block or vice versa, right? I think they have some versatility there. But I'm looking for them to get a two-guard.
Yeah,
a two or a three, but with the ability to be a 2 and D or 3 and D capabilities. You got to be able to knock down the three pointer. Got to be able to be consistent with it. But you also, with how Washington played defense, I was calling it turnstile defense last year on the perimeter. They've got to be able to lock down. They've got to be able to get some kills on defense. They've got to be able to get those stops and contain the elbow areas and no penetration to the nail. Like, period. And there's going to be no excuse if that can't get done. So I don't care if you can score the ball. You got to be able to stop somebody too.
Yeah, no, and I think at this point, you have Ariel Atkins and Natasha Cloud on the perimeter, and you got Shakir Austin in the paint. Like, yeah, the defense is going to be fine. You got those three. I think that defense is going to be fine.
You'll be all right.
I don't really care who else is around. Now, Alicia Clark was a big part of the perimeter scheme, and you know, I don't know if she'll be back.
I'm listening.
She struggled with some injuries, but you know, she's been around this offseason. Same with Elizabeth Williams. Like,
yes,
they've been around the team because they're under contract until December. Basically, that's how it works.
Right.
So I don't know if that means they're going to come back, but I think both those players would bring nice people to bring back. But I'm with you. I think the big addition for this team should be someone who can score on the perimeter. I'm not, you know, I think two or three would be great, but at the same time, in a lot of matchups, you're going to be able to play Natasha Cloud and Ariel Atkins ostensibly at the 2 and 3 defensively.
Okay.
And then offensively, you can figure it out. But in the ideal world, Maisha Hines-Allen is the 3. So it's just in certain matchups, she's not going to have the speed to be the 3. Hopefully she can be.
Depending
the 3.
Upon. Yeah.
Yeah. But wings are hard to find, right? So it's like, hey, if a player like Diamond Miller's in the draft, great.
Which that, she will that, be.
Well, yeah, but she may not be there. She may not be there when
she may
picking.
Be though.
She may
would
be.
Be the and piece. She, like, let's talk about that. Talk about that. Would that be the piece?
Yeah. Well, I don't know. I don't trust Diamond Miller to be be a championship level piece at this point. She's a college player first off, and she's been hurt a good chunk of her career. I don't think she's the type of player who's going to come in and make that sort of immediate impact.
I think she could, and frankly, I
think she could, but I don't believe I wouldn't bet on any draftee doing that this year, except for Aaliyah Boston. And last year, I said there's only two players, if you recall, Ryan Howard and Melissa Smith were the two players that can make an immediate impact. I was wrong.
Yeah,
clearly I was wrong. So don't take that. That's just my opinion. But I do think someone like that would be really helpful, a player in the Diamond Miller sort of way, if she can prove herself. I have them picking J.C. Sheldon because I think she's a player who can kind of, you know, toggle between the she can be a combo guard, right? Play one or two.
Yeah.
But I think she also fits in with Natasha Cloud and Ariel Atkins in terms of her shooting, in terms of her being a pest on defense. She won't be relied upon to be doing too much on ball defense. That's why I have her there, and that's the kind of player I think we're both envisioning, like a scorer to a scorer. I think I see more of a combo guard rather than a combo wing, but I think either way, there's going to be a perimeter scoring threat that this team needs.
Well, I like J.C. Sheldon. Wow. Now, listen, I wasn't even there with you on that until just now, but I'm all for that. If that's what it is that Eric and Mike see for the team, I just think that when you can, like you said, if you can come in and hit the ground running figuratively and literally, like comprehension wise, because that's a huge piece for WNBA rookies. You're finished with your collegiate season, depending upon how far you go in the tournament, but you don't have a lot of wiggle room in terms of resting your mind and body to be ready to compete and comprehend quickly a totally new philosophy, right? So I think J.C. Sheldon, I mean, her motor is always running, I think, on both ends, like mentally and physically. You know, I think that would be a fantastically intriguing piece if that were to come to fruition for the Mystics. I actually like that a lot.
Thank you. I got a little roasted for that. I'm like, you know what? Y'all, because I have a mock draft out. I'm like, y'all do your own mock drafts, okay? Like, what do you want me? Y'all want me to be real with you about this draft? We can be real about this draft really quick. Yeah. I don't know what the heck is happening after number one. Number one is Aaliyah Boston. That is it. That's the only thing I know of this draft. Everything else, you could tell me anything. Anything can happen after at two. It's like, I have no clue. Like, I have no clue what's going to happen at number two and on
Minnesota.
I don't know what they're going to do. Haley Jones has been mocked there, but it's like, hey, maybe she doesn't fit necessarily what they're trying to do. But
all time scorer at Iowa State. She just surpassed that this week. I saw that. So congrats to her.
Oh, Ashley Cyclones. Jones. Yeah.
Yeah.
I said Haley Jones, my bad.
Oh, you did? Oh, for
maybe sure. I said Ashley. No, I may have said Ashley Jones because I was literally looking at Ashley Jones. I was like, man, she could go number two. And I could be really wrong here.
But either way, like you can't lose with either one of them. But I love Haley Jones. We have the same birthday. I told you. So we're May babies.
So I have my mock draft out if anyone wants to check out the mock draft. But back to the Mystics.
Yeah.
I think it's going to be all right. We'll see. Surely there will be some road bumps. There have been road bumps for this franchise in the past. We expect more of them because that's the nature of business. But I think the Mystics are in a very healthy place.
I do too. And I think, you know, you can't lose. I mean, you have a number four pick, but they also have some other, you know, bonuses in this year's draft too. So we'll see what happens come April. That's when the true decisions are revealed.
Well, I mean, the biggest decision is probably going to come in February, you know? Because the Mystics may end up trading that pick, too.
Do you think they will? I don't think they will trade that.
Hey, it depends what's out there, right?
That's true, but they did a lot to get it. So I don't think they'll...
Yeah, but
That's, again, just me, no insider. But if I work so hard to get it, man, I'm keeping that thing.
But if it gets me a starting... three or starting person in the role that we just talked about, if it gets a starting veteran, like someone we can really trust in that position, absolutely trade the pick. I don't think this is, you know, and I may be wrong, and it's going to change a lot by the end of the year. I still think this is one of the drafts where it's like, you know, we have four players here that are superstar potential players. I don't think that's this draft. So that's why I would consider trading it. But we'll see what happens. They have plenty of time to figure that out. That'll be... Come February, we'll have a lot more knowledge.
Hey, but look, you know, they traded the pick for Shakira Austin, and that turned out very well. So let me acquiesce off of that and we'll wait till February.
Is Derek Fisher anywhere to trade the Mystics a draft pick?
I know.
Can we find Derek Fisher? Get him on the phone.
Chris, where are you at?
We have a question from JC. Thoughts on Elena Deladon's Nike Airs? The Air Deladons. I bought some. I don't have them on me. I wish I did.
Oh, where are they? They're
downstairs. No, you want me to get them?
You want to leave? Wait, no, that's weird. It'll just be me sitting here talking.
I mean, you could talk. Do you have opinions about the shoe?
Okay, go get them.
Yeah, I'm going to go get them. Okay.
Oh, my God. It's just me. Hey, y'all. Yeah, Elena Deladon, first of all, if you're watching, love you. But she has really done a tremendous job, obviously, with her inclusivity, with her shoe ideas and the creativity. I just love it. So Gabe's running to go get them. If you're just popping in here on our live podcast that Gabe left to go downstairs and get shoes. Anywho, welcome to Courtside. Anyway, I think that when you have the opportunity, like so many women right now, see, that didn't take long, with so many women right now to be able to have their own shoe, Gabe, I think is, I don't know, it's just extraordinary. The opportunity is just extraordinary, not only to have your own shoe, because we saw Cheryl Swoops years ago with her Air Swoops shoe and how amazing that was. I know across the board in college, we got the shoe, you know what I mean? So, everyone was excited about it being a woman, you know, the Air Swoops, that was a big deal. So Cheryl Swoops, shout out to you. But now we have the Air Deladons that gave.
I didn't hear most of what Christy said, but she's such a professional.
Reveal.
Just kept going.
I was shading you the whole time you were downstairs.
So,
I was giving you some shade. Wait, show them. Let's see. Talk to them. The lime green.
These are the limes. Yes. They are in honor of her battle with Lyme disease, Elena Deladon. So I love this shoe. Yeah. It's like a really cool, I don't think it comes through too much. It's like this really cool mint green color. It looks it looks good with a lot of outfits. Thing, if you're gonna buy the shoe, like this is not like a scuff mark or anything. That's just how the shoe comes. It has like this dappled sort of thing on the accents.
Okay.
I don't really know shoes that well. I think this one has something in its midsole that makes it a little bit cushiony. So like when you jump, there's like a little release of air. I'm a big fan of that.
I need those. The way my knees and back are set up, I need it.
These are awesome for old people as well. And for everyone. You know, Elena's whole thing, especially when she came out with her, there's the Universal shoe.
A couple years ago. Debbie Antonelli had those. Yeah. Yes.
It's all designed to help people who are differently abled or to play basketball and to be a participant in the culture, right? So these shoes, what you do with them. So here's how they look when they're tied. This stays tied. I just take off the Velcro. And I can pop this down. Actually, this has a little Velcro switch here.
Look at those with the hydraulics in the things. Okay.
And then as JC mentioned, the heel collapses a little bit so you can just step on the back and take it off, but it doesn't like fold because this back part is a little differently done. So you just slide your foot in here and you put the Velcro on, you're ready to hoop.
I need those for my kids. So yeah, they're good for like just sliding that foot in and crushing the back of the shoe. And I'm like, what happened to those shoes, buddy?
Exactly. This is the exact thing. And you could tell like, this is like a little bit different mesh. You probably can't tell on the camera, but
I can tell a different mesh. That's really nice looking. And then, go ahead, honey.
I love these, just for the record. Five stars.
Have you hooped
them?
Yes,
I have.
Huh. How'd you do? What'd you drop wearing those?
Numbers. I did. I do have numbers for it. I'm not going to share them. They're bad.
Come on, this is her hoop stats. I know you statted yourself.
Yeah, I did stat myself, and it's not good. It's not good. I stat myself, so I have an appreciation for basketball players. Okay. I play basketball myself, so I remember how good everyone else is at basketball, just so I don't get like too, you know. You get a little too familiar in this sport. Yeah. So if you don't play it sometimes and remind yourself, man, I'm not that good. But I did hoop in them. They were pretty good. I mean, my knee, you know what a big thing was? My ankles hurt a little bit because I'm not used to high tops.
Oh,
Helped my knees, though. My knees are a little bit better.
That's good to know for me. That's good to know. You know,
so that's
all those stairs at Cole Fieldhouse setting in, honey. You know, ran all those steps. College Park.
Cole Fieldhouse. Well, can you dig it? Cole Fieldhouse.
That was me running. Honey.
Elena, if you're watching this, send us some shoes. We're always shit. I want all of the color. There's four colorways. So there's like a rainbow one that's called the Be True. There's the purple one, which I think it's the BU. I forget which one it is. There's another one coming out later this year, and then I think there's two more coming out that have to do with the history of the WNBA. I think Calvin Wetzel wrote an article. I don't know where that article is.
But how about Billy?
So send us some shoes. That's a lot of Mystics, man. We got 30 minutes. We got 30 minutes out of the Mystics, and Dano says he can't wait to see me wear those shoes when we play 3-on-3. Is Christy? Do we get Christy?
Am I coaching that or?
Am I coaching? Christy, you're getting every post touch you want.
I'm gonna have to play then. So I gotta make sure I have my Del Doms on. You know, get some cryo and get some massage done. You know,
Dano's a big who refuses to play in the post. So maybe you two can just. I'll be the small in the post, and then
Let's
we can
see if run Dano wants that smoke. If I block one shot, I'm good.
Dano does not want the smoke. We want you. We're recruiting you for our 3-on-3 team.
Oh, good. I'm on Gabe's team. Yeah. So Dano, you're gonna have to get one sent back. Anyway, speaking of sent back,
you want to talk Iowa or do you want to talk Notre Dame?
Oh, I don't know. You know what? Let's go with let's start with the Notre Dame game and then work our way to what happened with Iowa yesterday against Kansas State.
Okay. So tell me about your experience being there, your firsthand look at the Notre Dame Fighting Irish with Olivia Miles.
First of all, Olivia Miles is the truth. As a point guard, facilitator, scorer, she's just fun to watch. I mean, a couple of times, you know, maybe she didn't score the ball or whatever, but the plays that she was creating and the passes she was making, I'm like, what in the what? Like, this kid, she's only sophomore, but she is well-versed. She is composed, but she's extremely strategic. And what you like to see from a point guard is the ability to set your teammates up. Right. Also, to be able to get downhill like she was able to do and just really make things tough and put a lot of pressure on the defense. So for her to have that balance in her game, I just gave her, you know, a tip of the hat because it was really fun to watch her in person. I'd seen her play, you know, on film prior to the Notre Dame game, but also last year as a freshman. This kid averages like just under 8 rebounds a game. She had just about 8 assists a game as a freshman last year. So coming into this season, you know, obviously with people understanding what your skill set is and understanding what they want to take away and still not finding success with that. I mean, that just speaks to your elite level basketball knowledge, right? You have to be smart. I don't care. Like physically, you have to be able, but mentally you have to be smart and you have to be composed. If you are the leader as a point guard, your team is going to feed from that, right? So I think in speaking with Lauren Ebo and KK Bransford, at their practice, you know, they don't care about their stats. Although they had,
Lauren had some stats.
She had a game, honey, and she had foul trouble too, but she was still able to do it. But they were telling us prior to that game that, you know, we don't care about our stats. We just want to win. Like we have balance on this team and they actually do. They don't go deep into their bench. And Neil Ivey said, hey, we're going to put players on the floor who are selfless. They have that. We're going to put players on the court who can execute. They have that. So they don't have to have 15 players deep, right, to be able to do what Neil Ivey has charged them to do, and that's represent Notre Dame to the best of their ability. Now, Notre Dame plays Maryland coming up in the ACC Big Ten Challenge. That's going to be a fun game to watch because
– Is that here?
Oh, I believe it is away. I believe it's at Notre Dame, but I don't have it in front of me. Double-check me.
It's at home. If it was in Maryland and Olivia Miles was coming, there's absolutely no way I'd miss
it. I thought it was away, but I know Debbie Antonelli's on that call because I just talked to her the other day on the phone. Hey,
Debbie.
That's my girl. But she's calling that game. But I think that's going to be an intriguing matchup between those two teams because outside of Lauren Ebo, they don't really have a tremendous amount of size inside. Mm-hmm. Maryland doesn't really have a tremendous amount of size inside either. I mean, Diamond Miller can play probably 1-5, right? Or at least 2-4, whatever. But mm-hmm. yeah. they don't really have the size that Maryland teams have had in the past, okay? So I think for Maryland, the way that I saw them playing defense in that first half anyway against South Carolina, saw that game live, their defense and their ability to mix up their defensive schemes, I thought, was really good, but they're going to need that against this team. Notre Dame yeah. has balance. They're able to stick shots. I mean, Dara Mabry is as tough as nails, just like her sisters.
Oh, she's a Mabry?
She's a Mabry. But she was tremendous in picking her spots. I mean, they rotated back in transition and really put pressure on Northwestern, and Mabry was in that corner just sitting and waiting and just knocking in shots, man. I mean, she's a toughie too now in defense. She's scrappy.
Oh.
Plays with heart. So they have a really good balanced team, and Neil Ivey holds them accountable, and yeah. it's just fun the way that they play the game.
Well, and you know, I want to look at, I'm going to read somebody's this box score because it's a little bit ridiculous, but you look at this starting five for them is experienced, and you know, you look at the talent here. In addition to Olivia Miles, you mentioned Dara Mabry, you mentioned Lauren Ebo, we have mentioned Maddie Westbo and Sonia Citrone, who was the freshman of the year last year. Although I think Olivia Miles she was not, because this is technically her third year at Notre Dame, right? She could, because yes, of COVID year,
yes.
yeah. So yes. she's a sophomore, but. She was not eligible last year for the rook, but whatever. So her teammate won it, so not a big deal, right? Right. But in this game, Olivia Miles in 24 minutes, without a single 3-pointer, I might add, 21 points, 6 rebounds, 4 assists, 4 steals, only 2 turnovers there, nine of 9 from the free throw line, which we obviously love around here. And then Lauren Ebo, as you mentioned, she played 13 minutes. My girl went 8 of 9 from the field.
She sure did.
3 of 4 at the line. Mm. 19 points in 13 minutes. I'm going to check that. I don't think that's happened very often. I would imagine it's the first time it's happened this season in a big in a big Big Six conference game. I'm going to look now. But man, I how did that happen? Because I didn't get to watch this whole game. I've seen clips of it. But like, how did she do that in such quick fashion? Was it her getting... feeds from her guards, which is something Olivia Miles does really well, or was it just rebounding? Like, what happened?
It was both. I mean, she just wedged herself in there. I think at one point, I believe it was in the second half, she caught a post entry pass, Gabe, and just kind of just moved the defense back. And I think I said on the broadcast, I'm glad I'm not playing anymore because ouch, right? She was so strong inside. Yeah. Like, it didn't matter if it was a post entry touch that she got, or she created her own touch from the offensive boards. She was just a toughie to deal with in there. I mean, she has great hands, number one, right? You can throw it anywhere and she's going to grab that thing.
Right.
But she also did a good job getting her position early in the quarter court. So if they were looking for her for entry passes in their offense, I mean, she was able to be above that block, be in that mid-post area where it's really tough to guard. You can go either way when you post up there, okay? Mm-hmm. And she knew that, but most times came baseline with it, got into the body, and was finishing at will at the rim. So I think for her to do damage of 19 points in 13 minutes, this is pretty extraordinary, number one. But the fact that she only missed one shot. I mean, that just speaks to her ability to set herself up early, right? To take high percent shots. She knows what she can do well. And boy, did she do it. And she got in foul trouble. Like I said, I mean, she would have been on the floor longer. She probably could have had 30 in 20 minutes or something like that. Because, you know, she got in early foul trouble. I think she picked up 2 early in the first half and then got that third one and had to come off the floor. And I think she ended up with 4 fouls. But yeah, she had to come off the floor because of that, because she would have never come off. I mean, I wouldn't take her out either.
No.
If you're killing like that, like 8 for 9, what? But also she was boarding well, and you know, just having her experience out there made a big difference. I think, you know, she played at Penn State, then transferred to Texas, and then now this is her third stop at Notre Dame. But I mean, just speaking to her, like I said, I mean, she just wants to win. Like, yes, that's a gaudy stat line that she produced, but at the end of the day, she wants to win the game. You know,
no, and
they're going to be better for it. They're number 9 in the country, you know, as we said, coming into that one.
Once you're getting a heck of an education. Just you know, going to Penn State, then going to Texas, then going to Notre Dame. That's 3 really good institutions. So good for her. I'm looking at the stats now, according to our research tool. This whole 20 points in less than 14 minutes thing has not been done since 2018 against a Power Five opponent.
Wow.
And I'm trying to look at the last Power Five matchup, in which it happened. Rutgers versus Purdue. Oh no, that's a misprint. Yes. Never mind. We can move on from that one. It'd be Rashonda Johnson in the tournament. In a tournament? Is this the NCAA? No. This is a Thanksgiving tournament.
Oh, okay.
She had 21 points in 14 minutes, yo. That's insane.
Come on.
Also, I do feel kind of bad, right? Because like, if you score 19 points, you should be playing more than 14 minutes. Like, get your fifth foul, right? Like, get foul out. Just go do it.
Man, listen, I'd be letting people go. If I was shooting like that, like, go ahead, because I want to stay on the court. But no, but yeah, that's ridiculous. 21 in 14 minutes.
So, Dana, I'm putting up Dana's comment. He says calling it Final Four for Notre Dame.
Wow.
Thoughts on that?
Wow. Sweet 16 run last year. I believe they were 24-10, their overall record. I could see that happening. I think they play very disciplined basketball. I think they're disciplined on the defensive end as well. But it's the balance for me. And, you know, they don't have the depth. If there's one thing that I'm, I don't want to say I'm concerned about, but if there's one thing I'm side-eyeing as they trek towards the tournament, you know, at the end of the season, I think it's going to be their depth, because you have to have that. I mean, you have to stay injury free, knock on every piece of wood that you have in your house. But you have to have health. But you also, I think when you get deep into the tournament, you have to have some semblance of depth. I mean, when we went to the Final Four, we only had 8 players. So I don't really know, like, sometimes it can work for you not having the depth.
Yeah.
And you just have to be smart. And, you know, I don't know how we did that. So I don't advise that for people to have 8 players. Like, we didn't have practice players. We had our assistant coaches come in and work with us so we could scrimmage and practice it. So, I mean, I get it. So it can be done. It's not impossible. It is more of a challenge, however, when you don't have the depth and you're going to play a lot of players on a short bench, long minutes throughout the season. And that's why I said health is the best wealth when it comes to your chances to make it to the Final Four. And I know Neil Ivy is primed and ready for it, but that was my only concern. But tactically speaking, yes, I feel that they're definitely a Final Four team early on in the season from what I've seen from other teams as well.
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, I had them, I believe, I think they may have been in like 5th in my ACC preseason rankings, which is a little crazy. Considering the talent, but there's just so much talent in the ACC. So yeah, we're gonna see a lot more of them. As you mentioned, they have that Maryland game, then immediately after they have UConn. So we're gonna find out a lot more about the team.
That'd be very interesting.
We should touch on Northwestern briefly, like first year after the Veronica Burton era. Doesn't seem like there's an heir apparent quite yet. I get they're a young team, right?
They're very young. They had 8 players, Gabe, that are freshmen or sophomores for Joe McEwen and his crew. Veronica Burton was at the game. We had a chance
to
see her at halftime, which is fantastic. Had a great rookie season with the Dallas Wings in the WNBA. Earned a starting position halfway through the year. And I think, you know, that's something that translates to what we were talking about with the Mystics. It's like, can you defend? Like, we know you can get a bucket. Like, if you're in the WNBA, you have to be able to get someone. But can you stop somebody, right? Can you get me a stop? Like, we know, hey, can you get me a bucket? Yep, check that box. Can you get me a stop, though? And a bucket. Give me a stop and a bucket. And that's what Veronica Burton was able to do with the Dallas Wings. But just super proud of her.
And Northwestern.
And, you know, the lineage goes long and it runs deep there for the Burton family. Her grandfather played football there. Mom was a swimmer there. Brother, like, they have a Burton Center on campus. Like, you know, it was a lot of pressure for her to be who she has become. But I mean, she revels in that. She embraces that. She has pride in that. And I think that's what sustains and carries her. So it's really fun to see these players evolve as freshmen in the Big Ten and at Northwestern. And then now, after a rookie season where she was tremendously successful with the Dallas Wings, I just think it's so much fun to to watch players evolve like that. Yeah.
Well, and hopefully for Northwestern, someone in 4 or 5 years, you're telling another story like this, where we got Northwestern talking to one of the freshmen who grew up into a really good player. Sure. But yeah, it might be tough sailing early in the early in this program for Northwestern. But you play tough teams to get better.
That's true. But there were ejections in this game if you didn't watch.
Oh, right. You mentioned that. So what? I didn't get to see that. So was it one incident leading to four ejections?
One incident led to three of the four ejections. Okay. And man, I wish I had that piece of paper that the officials wrote all of the things that happened in the play. Like Joe McEwen got an indirect technical. There were so many things. But what happened was there were two players that were in an entanglement on the court. Like it was a chicken wing situation. Right. Okay. So it went a little far. No one punched or did anything, right? But players are pulling people away from each other. So Walsh gets off the bench for Northwestern and she stands up first, right? That would have been the indicator to like snatch her back, because if you get 10 toes over that sideline, regardless of if you touch somebody, say anything, blah, 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 if you physically leave the bench and go onto the floor where a fight could possibly ensue, you're ejected. So she gets up, goes probably 2.5 steps before she got snatched up by a couple of teammates who then, because they got on the floor to get her off, all three of them got ejected. So
great.
That was the ejection.
I'm glad justice was served. Good job, everybody.
It was rough. And Northwestern was trying really hard to, get that traction, trying to get that experience. I said they had 8 freshmen and sophomores. And then for that to happen with 1:13 to go in the second quarter, I mean, it was the right call. It was the right call. And that's, I mean, from the book, that was the right call. Yeah. And then there were questions like, well, who left the bench for Notre Dame? And the officials took about 10 minutes to examine the entire tape, right? And looked at everything. And they would have ejected anyone who came off the bench for Notre Dame, but it was in front of the Northwestern bench.
So no one got up.
So they were down there, but I think they got held back, and we were watching, it was right in front of us too. I mean, obviously we're right at half court. Everything's happening over here. So my human eyes were on what's happening right here. I'm not like looking around in the stands like, oh, somebody's throwing a popcorn kernel. I'm not looking at all everything else, okay? Because we're broadcasting the game.
Yeah.
But the officials looked at everything. And that's who makes the decisions and the calls. So they didn't deem that anyone left the Notre Dame bench, or they would have ejected them too. So let's not take it to the point where, well, who left for Notre Dame?
But who
would have gotten them if they did. So
honestly,
not me.
Can we just whatever. If you step on the court, you have a grace period. Just get back. How about that? Let's institute some like reasonableness into like, hey, who cares if this person got 10 toes on the bench?
Yeah.
Whatever. Shouts to the refs for for taking up our times as per usual. We got to talk about one more game, possibly two. Iowa stunned.
Oh yeah.
Stunned.
Yeah, man. One
at
point.
Least in my book. 83-83 in Kansas State.
Yeah.
Kansas State, no Ayoka Lee this year, if you recall. They took it to Iowa, and I don't know. It's it feels pretty disappointing. And hopefully Caitlin Clarkson, as she got injured at the end of that game.
I know.
I'm gonna be honest. I didn't catch all of this game. I only started watching it when I saw it was closed at the end.
Right.
But I think it's some of those structural issues that we've talked about with Iowa, their defense, the way they're built. Mm-hmm. They struggled with Drake the other day. And so it's been a little bit rocky getting off the ground for them. Mm-hmm. Do you think? Are you concerned about them heading into the Big Ten schedule?
I'm concerned, and I'm hoping, like you said, that Caitlin Clark is okay because she means so much to them. Outside of her plus 25 points a game, I mean, she is the assist maker, the initiator on offense, and she boards well. So it's like they'd be missing a lot, obviously, of production without her on the floor. So hopefully, again, she's okay. But I just think, Lisa Bluter has said in the past, I would say Caitlin Clark's freshman year, okay, we're really great on the offensive end. I mean, we saw games where they were in the 90s and over 100 several times that season. And then that next year, she came back and said, we've got to shore up our defense. And they did that statistically, jumped into the top five or six in the Big Ten in terms of their defensive numbers. So with 11 players returning for Iowa, it's, you know, that kind of continuity, that means something, right? The chemistry, that means something, right? And a lot of that is on the defensive end for this team, where they run a lot of triangle and two stuff. They run a lot of zone stuff. They'll mix it up and at least the blue calls it player to player. Their man-to-man defense is what it is as well. But, you know, to have these close games early, I think it's going to enhance their competitive spirit and fire going into the Big Ten. Like, they can't come through the non-conference portion of the season in an easy manner and then jump into the Big Ten, where six teams in the Big Ten are ranked in top 25 and expect anything less than all the other teams' best after winning the tournament last year. So, and then bringing 11 players back.
And especially with Caitlin Clark,
especially with
Caitlin Clark on your team, who not only is the best, one of the best players in the conference, probably the best player in the conference, getting the most attention in the conference, which I don't know if you know this. Hey, basketball players kind of have an ego about that kind of stuff. I don't know if you've heard this before.
You should.
And so they already don't like her. And then she talks to them the entire time. Yeah. She's scoring 30 plus points on them. So everyone's going to get, you're getting everyone's best shot. I just don't think they're ready for it against Drake, which I did watch a healthy portion of that game. I don't think they're ready for it against Kansas State. And man, I just think this defense, it's just shaky. I don't know how they get better, rim protection. I don't think their guards are playing particularly well. I think their communication's bad. And those are things that you don't want to see when you have 11 returning starters. That shouldn't. If your structural problems are your structural problems, look, like, hey, teams are going to be able to get to the rim, and they have good chances to finish there. It is what it is. But you also can't compound the problem with mistakes that you would make when you're in your first time playing with someone. I think that's kind of what, you know, hurt Iowa against Drake. It's hurt them against Kansas State.
Yeah.
And that's something they're going to need to get worked out for when they go up against teams that perhaps they don't have a great scouting report for, right?
Right.
I think when we've seen them lose, they do really good in the conference, right? Why? Hey, they're really smart basketball players.
Yes.
They work really hard. So I think they have better scouts when they get in conference, but when they get out of the conference, whether it's in the NCAA tournament or early in the year, there can be some struggles with teams that on the defensive end. But still, I mean, like, you know, there just has to be there has to be, you know, execution. And I hate saying that. I hate saying that because it's such a cop out, right?
No, it's the bottom line. It's reality. It's reality. But go ahead.
They're not going to be. They're not going to be good on defense. My point is, I don't think they're going to be good on defense, regardless.
Okay.
But they can certainly be better, and they will absolutely need to be better to get anywhere close to where they're going, let alone a Final Four or a national championship appearance.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think when you know, have that level of expectation too, I think that puts a lot of pressure on you. And not that it's a bad thing; it's actually a really, really good thing. Yeah. To have that pressure, and not only to be the one who is targeting other teams, but now to be the one with the target on your back. Now there's a different mentality to that as well. And what that takes to sustain mentally. But to be able to know that, embrace that, and still come in and dominate, that's the challenge of it all. Okay. And I think that's what I was learning now. And I think it's better that they're learning it now, so when they do get into the Big Ten portion of the season, they're more than prepared. They've been battle tested out of the conference. And like I said, with six teams ranked in the top 25, you know, night in and night out, those teams are going to be targeting you as well. So I don't know if it's like, you know, just change your mentality to this is a new year. Everybody, like, we're all out here, or to be the queen of the hill, right? And be the ones like, we're up here until somebody decides otherwise, right? But there's two ways of looking at that, and whatever works for you, use it to your advantage mentally, because personally I've been on both sides of that, right, as a player and a coach. So I know, you know, that you have to lock in and stay with the mentality that's going to carry you the furthest, and that's going to sustain you to you know, stay on your course. And I think it's going to be interesting to see what that is for Iowa.
Hey, we'll see. I want to give two shout outs really quick before we move off Iowa. First is to Megan Gower and Calvin Wetzel. We did our like podcast preview before the season. We all picked teams who were going to fall out of the top 10. that were in the top 10. So top 10 teams are going to fall out of top 10. Okay. Me being an idiot picked UConn because I'm an idiot. You should never listen to me. I picked UConn. Calvin picked Tennessee, been correct. And then, Megan picked Iowa. So they're correct. Good job. Good job for them. And yeah, I do want to talk about AZ Fudd. I can't pronounce your name. I'm sorry, but someone wants to talk about AZ Fudd. But first, I have to complain about someone else's defense because Oklahoma gave up 124 points in regulation.
Yeah.
This may be the worst defensive performance I have ever seen.
I don't know what happened.
It was bad. I can't tell you what happened. I was watching. I couldn't get past the first quarter because I was like, I can't watch this. And they move so fast. And that's one of the fun things about Oklahoma. Hey, they move fast, run and gun. We're getting shots up. Well, when it goes wrong and you're not doing anything on defense to stop somebody, you're going to give up 124 points in regulation. It's the most scored in regulation against Power 6 team in the Her Hoop Stats era, which means since 2009. Come on, Oklahoma. You're killing me. I said some real nice things about y'all on this podcast like a month ago, and you're killing me. 124 points? Good God.
Yeah.
Hi, Paul. I forgot about my second shout out. Jeff Mitty, congrats to Kansas State. We didn't talk about them enough. Yeah. Good for them. They had a great party. Yeah. But Oklahoma, tell me about their defense. Tell me. I don't know. I don't know what to do. I don't know what to do.
Yeah, or lack thereof. I mean, I think sometimes, and you can correct me if I'm wrong on this, but I think sometimes when you are playing and coaching, but I think obviously when you're playing it, it matters more, I believe, because you're on the floor. And you can do something about it physically. But I think when the game is getting away from you like that, it's difficult to mentally recover from that. And maybe it's, well, you know, this just isn't our night. And maybe you decide that too early in the game and don't punch back. Yeah. Like if you're getting punched in the jaw, you know, like uppercut, like doozies, like to the grill, and you don't respond, like, no, it's not your night, but you got to do something about it. And I don't know if it's a tactical adjustment. And I'm not saying that Oklahoma didn't do anything tactically to adjust to the onslaught and avalanche of offense, but I think it's up to the players. Like, I don't care if you change to a press or take the press off or go to a box and one, somebody's killing us, switch it. And maybe that doesn't work either. But as a coach, I know, when I felt the team sinking and with the body language of the players, maybe not being so great, I'll call a timeout and just change something. So we're not just going out doing the same thing, change something. And if that works for a possession or two, boom, we're going to do it. Cause I mean, I've thrown kitchen sinks out, you know, as a coach, like we're not going to sit here and just take it. And no, even if it's not working, like, I'm going to change it and that didn't work. Okay, we're going to change it and that's not working. We're getting killed. Sure. But I'm just not going to sit there and get pummeled. Like, just.
Well, I don't know what you could try to do because it was like, there was no scheme. It was like, they would try, you know, I felt bad because I was like, hard. I put Maddie Williams in my mock draft and I was like all excited to watch it. And they give up 124 points. I was like, Maddie, you got to be kidding me, man. Like, I need you to be good on defense. Like, you know, and so yeah. I'm watching her and like, I don't know, it must've been 20 possessions. I was watching on Synergy and it was she must've been denied the pass to the wing and got beat back door because none of her teammates were helping her. Like six or seven times. So yeah. I don't know whose fault that is. It's like, I'm guessing if she's denying that pass, it's because she's been told to. So where's your help? Where's your communication?
Yeah.
And then I think their competitiveness fell because of that. I think it is easy for that to happen, right? When it's like, well, I've done my job and now no one's behind me. And my teammate just screwed me. And it's like, those are the types of things that I feel, that's what makes defense so frustrating.
Yes.
It's like,
if
it's not there, everything else falls apart.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
The trust on offense falls apart.
There it is.
The way your communication falls apart. Everyone starts getting mad at each other. particularly when the problems are in the defensive end. If you're missing shots, it's frustrating, but you can live with it, right? You miss shots, but defense, man, that killed me. I was mad about that. I was hot about that with Oklahoma.
But I think it is, like you said, I mean, that was the bingo word for me, trust. Like, you have to be able to trust your teammates, you know, defensively. But I think also you have to trust yourself. I was going to say that first. Like, you have to trust yourself first, right? Am I executing defensively? Okay. And then when I'm executing defensively, my teammates need to be on a string, right?
Yeah.
We got to be on the same chain out here, because one link is off that chain and the entire defense breaks down. We can't have it. And when it continues to happen, it is. That's a backbreaker. And it is a backbreaker for coaches, because it's like, no, we know you need to be up the line. Like, you have to be ready and help. You can't be hugging on the weak side. You got to get off. So these are all things clearly that I've said
a million times.
It's,
yes.
It's rolling off of my tongue. But yeah, when you see that and it repeatedly happens, I mean, it really takes the wind out of your sails. And it is, again, it's up to the players to execute. It's up to the players to understand, what it takes. And if you don't get it three times in a row, well, that fourth time, you better be really trying harder, right, to get that done, because that's what we need to happen. And not necessarily to win the game, but to be better. Right? You can lose the game, but play hard and improve yourselves for the next game. That can happen. But it doesn't happen when you give in to the moment of being like just uppercut to death. You can't give into that. And that's the whole challenge of the game of basketball. It's a life lesson, right? You're just going to stand there. You're not going to move. And you can't, I don't know. Don't let me, just go ahead, Gabe, because I'm going to start preaching and I don't want to.
No, I get it. I felt the same way.
Things happen.
I was yelling at my computer screen watching that. And then the reason why is because I like you, Oklahoma. I like you.
Same.
Be better. Same. So I can like you more.
Same.
In March.
Yeah.
All right. We got to talk about a few more things. I had some other things on the list, but we do have to talk about AZ Fun. Because I just said, as always, UConn proves Gabe wrong again. they hammered Texas.
They did.
What was the final score there? I'm trying to look. 83-76.
Yeah.
83-76, man.
Yeah.
And second game of the season for them. And just
AZ
Fudd, 32 points. She had a crossover, man. I put it on TikTok. Follow me on TikTok.
Yeah.
She had a crossover, and she had the defender on the sideline like this.
She made her touch earth. AZ made the girl touch earth, honey.
And she looked like she was going on a slip and slide. It was... AZ, I said I was worried about UConn's point guard situation. Yeah. And I was worried about some other things with UConn. Well, hey, that's all better, because AZ Fudd's just a superstar, as we knew she would be eventually. Did you get to watch a lot of her performance?
I did. I did. And I saw Katie and Tim there, her parents.
Yeah. Oh yeah,
y'all. Those are my people. But I saw them sitting there, and they were just so proud. And at the end of the game, it was just, I don't know, maybe it was four or five of her shots were just so definitively, so definitively dominant.
Okay. Yeah.
She wanted those moments at the end of that game. She knew that the team needed her to step up in that capacity. And not only did she acknowledge that the team needed her, but she acted on it and executed it. So for me, I was like, you better go ahead, AZ. Another sophomore. We were talking about Olivia Miles earlier, but only a sophomore. AZ Fudd wasn't 100% healthy last year, missed a chunk of games, especially at the beginning of the season, but then came along strong. Obviously, they made a run to the Final Four, but you know, without the services of Paige Beckers this season, you heard Gino Auriemma say, hey, AZ, we need you to be you and Paige all at the same time. And she's like, okay, you know, and went out and did that 32-point performance. Yeah. But I just think for her ability to make great passes, I know she turned the ball over a little bit in this game, but I digress. The plays that she was able to make down the stretch changed the
complexion. Seven turnovers.
Yeah, we weren't going to give exact, but we are her hoop stats. But she turned it over a little bit, but all those kind of happened in the first half.
Yeah.
I think she had six of the seven in the first half. So she self-corrected in the second half. I think I heard Rebecca Lobo say she had six at the halftime wrap-up thing. Anywho, so she only had one in the second half. And so I think the second half for AZ Fudd and for Connecticut, for that matter, really showed and proved what this UConn team could be this season against a team like Texas, who we knew was going to come in with some staunch defense.
Texas, no Rory Harmon, by the way, just in case you didn't watch it. There's no Rory. That's and as Dano points out, Dano did point out.
What did Dano say?
Texas did cover without Rory Harmon.
Oh, see.
And good teams win. Great teams cover the spread.
Ha ha.
Texas is great.
Texas is a great team. You're right.
But sorry, I digress.
No, you're good. I think, you know, for Texas, I thought, you know, we thought last week or whenever we had our last pod that Texas was going to come in and really have a grinded out defensive battle against this UConn team, which I think it was for the most part. But when it came time to get those stops that they needed down the stretch, AZ Fudd just said, no, ma'am, and just totally dominated the moment. And Gino Auriemma said, you know, that was a first team All-American performance. That was a player of the year performance by AZ Fudd. I mean, and he said, just watch out for her this year. I'm telling you, she's different. She's not the same kid as she was last year. She's healthy and she's ready to go. And we're like, all right. And remember, we said that on the pod, like, let's see if that is what is going to happen in this Texas game. And sure enough, there it was for everybody to see, honey. She was, yes, she was doing it. AZ Fudd was doing it.
It's really great to see UConn get a player like this. You know, they just haven't had many players like this. And it's nice to see the wealth being spread across college basketball. Like, you know, not all the great players play on one team. Sorry. Just a little mad that I have to continually say that I'm wrong about UConn. But shout out to AZ Fudd, obviously, DMV.
Yeah, shout out DMV.
We scrimmaged her little brother yesterday, who, hey, turns out he's pretty good, too.
Jose. Hey, Jose.
Yeah. Even where's number 35, too?
All 35ers. It's Katie's number. Katie Fudd. Hi. Yeah, that's her.
Oh, really?
Georgetown. She went to Georgetown. Yeah. Oh, NC State. She went to Georgetown, but then, yeah, I digress.
So the number comes from Katie Fudd, not from Kevin Durant.
I don't think Kevin Durant is in that mix, but I could actually ask Katie when we get off of here because I'm using my phone, or else I would text her right now. But I'm using my phone for this whole pod. So,
shooter.
But she was 35. She was number 35 at NC State. She was rookie of the year at NC State for Kay Yao back in the day, Katie Fudd, Fudd's mom. So she transferred after that 1 year at NC State and went to Georgetown and did major numbers there as well. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, she played at Madison High School in Virginia. So
she went to Madison? Okay, I didn't know. I know her father, Tim, went to Chantilly because that's
he did. He has a number too, by the way.
Yeah, he does. He lives in Chantilly.
He went to America. Anyway, we're telling the whole life story. Hey, AZ.
It's a DMV history, though, really. Like, it's a DMV history lesson. Great shouts to the family, the Fudd family. Yeah. Shouts to AZ, though, even though I'm a little mad at you for making me look stupid. Shouts to Nika Moll, also 9 assists.
Shoot,
Nika. Man, she's tough. Bro. She had one play. I might need to post it. She rips through and holds her triple threat harder than I think anyone's I've ever seen. Like, I forget who it was for Texas. It might have been Shayla Gonzalez. Like, you know, I think Nika gets the ball top, like in the slot, waiting for the movement. And Shayla puts a hand in there. And Nika just takes the ball and smacks her arm away, you know, like trying to move right away. And Shayla got out of the way before it was a foul call. But it was like so fast and mean. And she brought it right back in front of her face. And I was like, yo, this girl's going to start a fight someday. And I'm here for it. I got her back because I really love her. But, you know, hey, I think for UConn, great win. You know, they're not where they want. I'm sure they're not where they want to be yet, but they're looking a lot better than what I said they would look like. So I'm wrong. Yeah, Gabe's wrong.
But, they had a lot of injuries. I mean, obviously Paige being out too for the season, but she did say she was going to return for the next season. So she'll get a chance to play with AZ in AZ's junior year and what could possibly be Paige's senior year, depending on what her decision is after next season. But yeah, you know, they were losing bodies. They were down to what, 8 or 9 healthy kids. But I think, you know, Nika Moll, she was like, oh my God, there was this picture of Nika on, I think it was the UConn's Instagram page, but she had this face. I don't even know. Maybe it was after that rip through sequence that you were just talking about. She had that, like, just, you're not messing with me today. Like, just stop trying. Like, she was so determined. Like, her face was like,
I saw her at the finals, her and AZ and the UConn team rolled up to the finals in Connecticut. She had the same face, you know? Always. It was like, she was like, I'm getting to my seat. Like, get out of my way. I was like, girl,
purpose.
She's got the juice. Like, that is a player that absolutely has the juice in that way. And you know, Nika's gonna have a big year. Good for UConn. Good good for them.
Yeah, it's good stuff.
They never win. They never win things in women's basketball. So it's nice to see them win things in women's basketball. All right, back to it. We ran a little long, so we didn't get to talk about this game a little bit. But I do want to. I'm going to force us to make a pick here.
Okay.
Number one, South Carolina at number two, Stanford Sunday, 3 p.m.
Yeah.
ABC. Who you got? You can always send it back to me if you want me to go first. But who you
no,
got?
I know what I'm doing. I'm Where actually very like on it right now. I'm going with South Carolina, and the reason I'm going with South Carolina is because I saw them live here when they played Maryland a couple of weeks ago or last weekend. And for me, and I haven't seen Stanford in person, but I've seen them play the season. Love their game. Love what they're able to do. Yeah. I just think South Carolina is going to just terrorize them. And when I say terrorize, I think they can throw so many different variations of South Carolina basketball at you in terms of the lineups that it's going to be really tough. And I know Tara Vanderveer and Dawn go way back to USA basketball and the Olympic team in 96 and all of that. So there's reverence there. I know they have history in the Final Four, you know, when Aaliyah Boston missed that shot two seasons ago and Stanford won the whole thing. But then last year, South Carolina won the whole thing, you know, to bring it on back home. But for me, this South Carolina team, some teams go four out, one in. This South Carolina team can go four in and one out. They're huge. Ami here is phenomenal.
I love that, Christy.
She's a mismatch nightmare. Ami here is the one for me. Number 15, if you don't know who she is, for me, I'm like.
For Canada in the World Cup, too.
What do you do with that? Like, for me, I'm like, what do you do with a player like that? Not only, like, what you're going to do defensively against a player like that. Because she's a challenge. She's going to fly around and get to the offensive boards. She's going to fly around and get to the defensive glass. She's going to take you to the rack. Her first step is ridiculous. But what are you going to do with her, like, defensively? Like, she can play probably all five positions defensively.
Oh, you let her shoot.
Well, yeah. But
take as many, to me, South Carolina, I tell them, y'all take as many jump shots as you want. They're shooting better this year, though. So that's becoming a problem very quickly because Zaya Cook's actually hitting some of her shots this year.
She is. She is. She hits some. Yep.
And that's huge. I mean, that's such a relief, man, just to see her hit some shots. I mean, it's still not great, but at least she's hitting her threes and seeing them go in. But yeah. All right. I agree, to be honest.
You do?
I agree. I think I would pick South Carolina. However, here's my thing.
So you're not agreeing with me.
No, I'm going to give the case for Stanford because I do think there's a pathway to them winning, first off, because they're a really good team.
Okay.
Secondly, I think for South Carolina, they've been hearing how good everything is, right? Like how great y'all are, championship, doing the NIL stuff, doing your promotion. They already had a big game on the road at Maryland. They probably had to hear a lot about Maryland. You want to know what Stanford has heard since they lost in the Final Four last year?
What?
South Carolina. South Carolina. South Carolina. South Carolina. This game. This game. This game. This game. This game. This game. And they have the talent to stand up to a team like South Carolina because they're also super big.
They are big.
And I think I just, you know, look, hey, if South Carolina's hitting shots, it's over. We can go home. But I think there's a good pathway to them playing like they did last year in South Carolina, and bringing that over into Stanford where they have the home court advantage, and just being able to get South Carolina in a motion, being able to move their bigs around, forcing everyone to defend the entire floor. I think that's going to be huge for them, and getting some shots loose. I think their defense has enough strength, and it'll really come down to, hey, is Cameron Brink in the game and she's not fouling? Is she able to stand up to Aaliyah Boston and make her shots tough so that you can still sag in, but you don't have to completely collapse as a defense and really open up not only shots, but driving lanes as well.
True.
So I think they can do that. Do I think they will do that? No.
Uh-oh. Okay.
I'm not betting against South Carolina until further notice. But if I had to pick one, Stanford, I mean, it's easy to say because they're the number two team in the country, but I think Stanford really does match up well for them. And it'll just be a matter of, hey, who's making their shots and who's not turning the ball over and who makes their free throws, man.
Period.
Both teams struggle with free throws, which
that's true.
That drives my wife crazy. I don't think anything, nothing I do certainly drives her more crazy than seeing players miss shots, miss free throws.
True indeed.
I tell her sometimes, like, yeah, she's shooting like 63% and Emily freaks out. She's like, that shouldn't be possible.
I love Emily. Aw.
She loves free throws. She just loves free throws.
Right there. Yeah.
All right. So we both got South Carolina on that one. Huge feast week. Just an awesome slate. Unplugged previewed it the other day.
Yeah, it's gonna be fun. It's gonna be a great game, period. And I know, I mean, Stanford, like you said, is gonna give them a run, but I just, the way South Carolina was playing, man, they're so in sync with one another. Dawn Staley has that train rolling. And first of all, they travel well. Those, she calls them FAMS, F-A-M-S, like the fans are FAMS. Yeah. And Dawn, give her so much credit. After that Maryland game, she stayed after for like maybe 45 minutes taking pictures with everyone, not just the South Carolina fans, but fans from Maryland, including me, because I played against them. So it's like, I love Dawn, but just to see the women's game at that level where fans and fams are traveling across the country and, you know, regionally to Maryland, but I'm sure they're going to be out there at Stanford. To see that for women's basketball is, I don't know, it was moving to me to see that. It was awesome to see that. So I'm just super proud of her. She knows it. I told her that when I squeezed her up after the game. But just to kind of be a fly on the wall and watch these little girls go up to her and be like, oh, can I have a picture? They have posters made with Dawn on it and the team on it. And I was just kind of standing back and observing. I mean, this is her hoop stats, right? I mean, her hoops, like women in basketball. I mean, the game has just grown leaps and bounds, but to be in that moment, regardless of the game, whether they won or lost, she would have been right there in the midst of all those fans and fams and those little girls who are watching with huge eyes, you know, I was just watching all of it. And it was just simply amazing to see. So bravo to Dawn Staley and South Carolina, win, lose or draw. Listen, the game is growing because of you and what you're doing to just enhance the experience and to have more eyes on the game. The game has always been great, but now, wow, everyone is having the opportunity to see it. And it's just really exciting. It's exciting times for our young girls who are watching and young boys too, because they have respect and reverence now for a game that's right in front of them. So, you know, kudos to South Carolina for traveling. I mean, it was, and kudos for Dawn. You know, she wanted to leave. I'm sure she was like, there's a storm coming in South Carolina. We got to get going, you know, but she was taking pictures and, you know, shaking hands, kissing babies. And, you know, it was a beautiful sight to see, to tell the truth. Like, yeah.
Well, one more thing before we sign off and say bye to the courtside crew. Y'all were amazing. Oh, we got to put Chiquita up here. What's up, Chiquita?
Hey, Chiquita. She's a living legend.
Living legend. Living legend.
She's the Beyonce of women's basketball. I'm giving her that.
All right, Dawn, we have to run that by Dawn Staley. We have to run that by Dawn Staley at some point. If anyone can contact her, let her know that she's Beyonce of women's basketball. But I did want to point out, like, my, you know, I was talking to my team last night. We were talking about AZ and how great she is, and you know, everyone appreciated it. So it's nice just to see, like, it is getting into, you know, the realms that we are not, right? That we have not been traditionally, and more and more people are paying attention to our game. And Saturday, Sunday. ABC 3 p.m. will be another huge showcase for that. And hopefully it's just a great game. And I think it will be. That's it for me, Christy.
For me too.
Yeah. You want to take us out here?
Yeah, we'll take us out of here. Hey, they're cutting the lights out on us again, people. But we're going to be back next time to bring you more right here on Courtside on the Her Hoop Stats Podcast Network for my guy, Gabe. Wait, for my
there
guy.
There it goes.
Gabe,
there it is.
For my guy, Gabe Ibrahim, I'm Christy Winter Scott, and we will see you next time.
I see you.
Let's jump into Peppa's world of play. Look for spring flowers, hunt for muddy puddles, and bravely explore exciting places with Peppa play sets. Peppa Pig, inspiring kid confidence.